Good evening and welcome to Outsources on KJNU, Boulder, Denver, Fort Collins. This is your host, Ryan Ayala. Outsources is a weekly lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer-focused news and culture radio show. Tonight we have Callan Heffernan on with us to talk about the intersection of queerness, disability, and her identity as a rapper. We met in her apartment here in Denver, Colorado, and discussed her creation of Wheelchair Sports Camp, a nationally known rap collective that has been touring since 2011. They released their first full album in 2016, titled No Big Deal. Tonight we explore her upbringing, her interest in rap music, her interest in beat production, as well as her place in the activist role of individuals with disabilities.
I'm here with Callan Heffernan, correct?
Yeah.
And she is the lead rapper in the Wheelchair Sports Camp group. I'm assuming it's a group. You guys seem like a collective.
Yeah, we're a group, a crew.
And we're just sitting here in her awesome apartment. Thank you for being on Outsources. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for coming. Since my wheelchair died, because I'm a real crip.
I hear it says crip on your stomach.
Yeah, it does.
I was reading this article from Westword back in 2011, and it said you were 24.
Then.
And so you're 31 now.
I'm 31 now.
And so just tell me a little bit about Wheelchair Sports Camp. What is it? What does it mean to you? How did you guys form that name and this collective?
Yeah, cool. I stole the name. There's an actual Wheelchair Sports Camp in Colorado that's been doing it for 30 plus years, or they're about to do 30. It's close to 30 years that I was involved in as a kid. But I wasn't a very good kid. I would go and corrupt, you know. I would still, like, go and get in trouble at this wheelchair sports camp, and it was, like, so lame to me. Yeah, I still went every year and, like, had a blast, you know, but I was, like, too cool for it. And I'd bring, like, all my able-bodied friends to, like, volunteer, and they wouldn't do anything, and we'd get, like, in trouble for being bad little hood rats. And and then I got older, a teenager, and was able to drive, and so I would volunteer, and that way they couldn't tell me, like, that I couldn't do that, because, like, you go in groups, so, like, you're supposed to do all the different activities, and the only thing that I kind of liked was tennis, but, like, mm-hmm. I'd get in trouble for staying at tennis or leaving the school to be bad. So there's a real wheelchair sports camp that I stole the name from, and a friend of mine, a kid who I used to take there in middle school, started wheelchair sports camp in, like, 10 years ago now. It was just, like, a silly idea, but we had already been rapping together since high school, and we were just, like, really satirical, and, I mean, the band name was already, like, satirical, and it meant something to us as well, and I'm still connected to the real wheelchair sports camp. So we were just I would make beats, and then I was going to school at the time at CU Denver to learn how to make beats better, and to learn how to use, like, the studio in a professional capacity. And I was using all my studio time to record Wheelchair Sports Camp. And then I started networking more with, like, live musicians. So we started kind of trying to add more live instrumentation into it. And it gave us so much more depth than just beats and raps, which is what we came up on, you know. And so we started playing more with live musicians, and we've had, you know, there's been a lot of evolution of different players in and out. And I'm glad you called it, like, a collective, or because it really has become that. Sometimes we play just three of us, especially traveling. It's easier to keep it small. But when we're playing at home, you know, sometimes we play with a lot of people, mm-hmm. and we are friends with a lot of people, and we're always collaborating and working with people we love, and our sound has really evolved over the years, from, I think, a more typical rap entity of raps and beats to now, you know, like just trying to push sounds and experiment with our voice and try and make things that don't sound like things, you know, like I'm always striving to like find something unique, which is hard because it's 2018 and everything's already been done.
But I like so in your 2016 release of No Big Deal,
Yeah. It
has this essence of like early gangster rap, like just, you know, I feel like the evolution of rap has gone from real mellow, chill, kind of like pot smoking music,
mm-hmm.
to this like real just out there, loud, and then it's kind of moved back into like the chill, like with Drake has kind of like brought back that smooth sound to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought that in that album.
Cool.
It's just, I mean, hindsight. Shit Talkers, is that what it's called? It's like those two, following it, same shit.
Yeah.
Those I'm like hooked on right now.
Cool.
You talked about the evolution of your music, going to CU Denver, learning engineering, beat production. What was it like when you first started Wheelchair's sports camp to now?
Yeah, well, again, it was like, you know, I'd started rapping when I was 12. Like, well, I started rapping when I was 5, but I didn't start writing my own stuff till I was 12. And then I, you know, I liked beats. I knew what I liked, but I finally, somebody gave us like a grant. We played this like really goofy show at a parking lot. And because I was disabled, somebody was like, hey, I do grants for disabled artists. And we got a grant for like $1,000. We're 16. And we got in a studio and it was like $25 an hour, which is nothing now. And we had no idea what we were doing, you know? And I was like, I want to make beats. And they're like, cool, here's a beat machine. And I'm like, how do I work it? You know, and it takes hours and hours to figure that stuff out. And when you're on the clock, you know, when you're paying per hour, I was like, shoot, I'm not gonna like figure this out without spending over our budget. So then I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna have to pay a dude to make beats, because that's who made all the beats. So I realized like I can't afford this in a studio setting. So I worked at Elitch's for 2 summers for like $5.25 an hour. So I got this beat machine and I started teaching myself how to make beats, and they were terrible, you know? And I've always just, I'm very DIY, but it was more because I had to, you know, because I couldn't afford to pay other people to do it for me. So after college, you know, I'm at the music school, but I was more on the tech side. I wasn't really networking a ton. I did network with our Abby, who played sax with us and sang with us for a really long time, and her brother. Then when I graduated, we started playing shows, and I started networking a lot more with, like, the live Denver band scene, and I was really closely connected to Unit E, which was a DIY spot over here on the west side that my drummer started. So that really opened me up, because my whole world was hip-hop, you know, my whole world was rap, and starting to find bands and like music that I really appreciated that wasn't just rap really evolved my sound. And then I started playing with more and more great musicians who were really like pushing the sound of like, yes, I like that. I don't know what the heck you just did, but do more of that, you know? And now, you know, I'm playing with just some of the best musicians in Denver, that it's really lended itself to like some really cool things that I'm excited about. And that's taken us a long time of playing together to get to be as experimental as we are now. And I would say with the 2016 release of No Big Deal, a big part of that album is because of Ike Owens. So this was the first time that we had a budget, saved a ton of money over the years of not getting paid, and were able to pay a producer and studio, and it was like a lot of the work was off of my shoulder. I made some of the beats on the record, but I also collect beats all the time from my friends in town. And so Ikey Owens was already producing Rebato, which is my drummer's band.
Okay.
And he's from Long Beach, and he was part of the Unit E crew, was touring with Jack White at the time, part of Mars Volta. And so he really took, like, these beats, these, like, some of them sound classic, some of them sound, you know, whatever. But he took them to, like, different places that I wouldn't have heard that were, like, much more strange and exciting. So he had a lot to do with that, and now we're starting to write stuff again, and we're really trying to, like, push ourselves to just not, you know... Hip-hop can be pretty formulaic. My hip-hop brain is like, 16-bar verses, hook, you're done, you know? But bands, you know, it's like, opens you up to a little bit more than just that, like, basic song structure. So, yeah, it's come a long way, and we're starting to get, like, real noisy and, like, chaos between pretty, you know what I mean? Like, I really love when everything kind of like falls apart and then it comes back.
Yeah.
Which we've been trying to do more of.
Brings me back to the beginning.
You've been listening to Outsources on KJNU, Boulder, Denver, Fort Collins. That was Hindsight off Wheelchair Sports Camp's 2016 album, No Big Deal. In the next section of our show, we explore Kellen Heffernan's coming to terms with her identities, both as a feminist, queer, and an individual with a physical disability.
Kinda sore, right low butt level, looked class and of course wore an outlook that'll last in a door so short. Now look, tiny smashing on tour, always a piper, observe people through my peephole, caught life. So yeah, I identified with rap before anything, before I really like came to terms with my sexuality and my gender, my identity and all of that. And I think the disability piece, even though it's always been such a big part of me and the biggest part of me, I don't think I really started like embracing that identity until that was kind of the last identity I think that I really like embraced and identified with. And that's been even up to like the last year or so of like me feeling like disability wasn't represented in all these talks of marginalized communities, and it was really hard for me. I went through a really trying time last year, especially I started getting more into activism and protests and this, and it's like time and time again you were hearing like intersectionality became this like cool topic. And I'm excited about that, but like time and time again, disability was left out of that. And I was like really messed up about it. And then I realized, well, what do you know? You know, like, and that's true. You know, I like learned about my civil rights history. I learned about women's suffrage. I learned about the queer movement, you know, but I wasn't ever thinking about disability justice, you know? I mean, I was surrounded by a crew of able-bodied people who carried me to wherever the heck I needed to go. And I'm touring the world and playing concerts that are sometimes inaccessible, and I've had this really weird privilege of doing whatever the hell I want. I think my parents had a big part to do with that too, but because of my size, because I'm so small, and because I'm a little nuts and like trust drunk people to carry me with my life, you know? And so I've never really I wasn't limited as much in my expression for sure, and definitely in access. And my music kind of brought me to a much clearer like vision of what it's like for, you know, other disabled people. Disability is such a big thing, you know. There's people dealing, so many people have a disability. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been a wild ride.
Yeah, it sounds like it. What was the reception from the disabled community on the release of your album, or just you gaining a name in this country as a queer disabled artist, queer disabled rapper? What's been the feedback about that?
It's been great, and it's humbling, and it's heavy. It feels like a lot of weight sometimes, of like, I don't want to be the tokenized, you know. So much, in fact, that when I started rapping and doing it on a more professional MySpace scale, people would...
We all start somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wheelchair Sports Camp is for sure a MySpace band. There were people reaching out to me, one disabled activist in particular, who was like, I got to get you involved with Crip Hop. And it was like, it was so screwed up on myself. Like, I published a song called Cripple Dance or something. It was like a project for school, and I posted it under a personal account. And so I'm here, like, using disability for sarcasm and for that, like, gut reaction or the whatever, you know. I'm tokenizing myself, and then people are reaching out to me to, like, connect me with the disability world, and I wanted nothing to do with it. I was like, I'm not going to be a disabled rapper. Like, I'm going to be a good rapper. I'm not going to be a female rapper. I'm going to be a good rapper. And I would, like, kind of, I really was like, this is where I'm, like, unpacking some of my ableism. Is, like, I didn't want to be boxed in by this. And that, to me, now looking back, is so messed up, because I'm using Wheelchair Sports Camp in my band name, you know, like, I'm using it to my advantage. And then, like, when activists are calling me out to, like, you know, be part of the community, I'm like hesitant and like, ugh, you know, I'm disabled, but I'm not that disabled or whatever, you know. And I finally heard a really great interview from this guy, Leroy Moore, great historian, disabled black guy in Oakland, who's done some just amazing radical stuff. And when I saw him more as an activist and not just trying to, like, leech off of, like, my disability, I was like, Caleb, what are you doing, you know? And then, like, within, I finally reached back, and he's like, come to NYU and speak. And I'm like, yeah, of course, why wouldn't I want to, you know? But I was pretty ignorant, you know, like, again, I was, like, pretty brushed up on a lot of movements, and I wasn't really brushed up on what the disability community faces, and so it's been a really trying time, and my music has really, like, pushed me, pun intended, to be more aware, because more, like, I started touring, and we play one inaccessible, we started here in Denver, and we're playing inaccessible shows all the time, and I finally was like, yo, what if somebody in a power chair comes to see me? I'm gonna feel so bad. Like, I can get down, but that doesn't mean other people can. So I started, like, listing on my website, this place is accessible, or it's not, and locally it's easy, because I know everywhere. And nobody disabled would come out, or visibly disabled, you know, mm-hmm. like, nobody in chairs would ever come out. So I was like, well, screw it, doesn't really matter. And then I travel, and we play one show in San Francisco that's inaccessible. And probably because of that Leroy connection and the Bay Area having such a strong movement for disability justice, they called me out. Wow. They were so pissed. And I was getting, like, multiple messages, like, we want to come see you and we can't. And I was like, yo, this sucks.
When did this happen?
2011.
Okay.
We played a historic, beautiful place called Cafe du Nord in San Francisco with the Flobots. And this is, again, a situation that I don't have a super amount of control in. You know, we're supporting artists. We just barely got out of Denver. I can get carried. So I was like, yo, you're right. We're going to play a show on the corner, on the curb, for anybody who wants to come before the actual show. And of course, like, one person came, you know, and it's like, it opened my eyes so much, and it made me realize, like, just the, and I still have a constant struggle, and I always have to, like, consider whether or not to play in accessible places. And now we did this, the most recent tour we did, well, two tours ago, we went to the Northwest for the first time, like Portland, Seattle. Mm-hmm. All these disabled people came out. Wow. It was so dope. Oakland, like the Bay Area, they come out, like disabled people come out. And it's been really cool traveling. Traveling has been what's made me realize that, like, this band has given itself a platform around disability just because of who I am. And that's very humbling. And I'm like, oh crap, people are listening. Kaylin, you need to, like, check yourself, you know, and check your privileges and check your ableism. It was the band that did all that. And now I have people, like, especially after Heart Out Here for a Gimp came out, you know, it's like a lot of people like, wow, this is the first music that actually I feel like represents me. And then I'm like, oh, that's crazy, that's scary, don't put me in that. Mm-hmm. You know, that puts a lot of weight on my shoulder. But then I'm like, who did I come up with that represented me? And then there was nobody. And I'm like, whoa, this is a big deal. This is a big deal that I'm out here doing this, because I've never seen somebody that looks like me and doing this. Rapping and sitting down. No matter where I go, all eyes are on me. Everyone, stop what you're doing. The human's moving. Ooh, and I breathe. One of many thousands, yeah, that's who I be. Now I need the whole room to freeze. They're God blessing me, but I didn't even sneeze. On their knees, questioning excessively. Wanna know my life expectancy? Like it doesn't get to me. Get a hysterectomy or life worth living. Don't watch TV, sounds like a gimmick. Little people living in a big world. Successful married couple that have kids, girl. Let me guess, they eat dinner too. My breath ain't nothing but an interview. It's not what I did or what I didn't do. I learned to exploit all this shit when I was introduced to the game. Born into lame medical debt. The brain and body weren't identical yet. We made a hell of a bet, a hypothetical mess. Now I gives no fucks and it's incredible. Yes, I'm still tangled up in a mic cable and not able to eat at high tables or live life stable. I've been all your right labels, but didn't get catcalled and ain't complaining at all.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time this afternoon to talk to me, Kaylin.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for coming to my spot.
Yeah, I've enjoyed the conversation and I'm stoked to see what Wheelchair Sports Camp does and what you do as an activist and as a rapper and a feminist, queer, disabled person.
Thanks.
Yeah.
We'll be keeping at it, playing more shows and writing new music for sure through it all.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. Out Boulder County is offering advocacy support for domestic violence survivors. It's been happening since January 23rd of 2018 at the Out Boulder County Longmont office on Tuesdays from 12 to 2 p.m., 630 Main Street. These services are being offered by Safe Shelter of St. Vrain Valley. Tuesday afternoon from 4 to 5:30 at Out Boulder Pride House, 2132 14th Street, Boulder. You can come and connect with queer artists slash activist and find out how to get involved in the arts activist movement by writing, drawing, painting, performing, and socializing. They create poetry, zines, music, and lots more. At 6 p.m. in Out Boulder Pride House is Queer Creative, a gathering place for LGBTQ people and allies ages 18 to 25. At the 6 o'clock hour, you can find Queer Creative, a group of individuals coming together, 18 to 25, to discuss, to express themselves artistically, linguistically, or however they see fit. And that's at Out Boulder Pride House, 2132 14th Street, Boulder, Tuesday night from 6 to 7:30. That's tomorrow night. In the same 6 o'clock hour, just on 2027 Broad Street, Suite A, Boulder, Colorado, you can find Queer Conversation, which is a drop-in discussion group for queer folks to meet and share ideas, thoughts, struggles, concepts, theory, lived experiences, and everything under the rainbow of queer. You can also find a support group at the Out Boulder County Longmont office, 630 Main Street, from 6:30 to 8:30, which you can come and discuss your identity and the expansive group of transgender, genderqueer, genderfluid, agender, non-binary, and intersex individuals. At 7 p.m., Elevation's classic film series is showing The Pink Panther, 2960 Diagonal Highway, Boulder, Colorado. The showtime is 7 p.m. The runtime is about 1 hour 55 minutes. This is the classic Pink Panther 1964 version. This has been the new segment of Outsources on KGNU. Thank Callan Heffernan for coming on to Outsources, for having a conversation with me about her identity, her music, and what it means to be an individual with a disability in this country. Sharing the stories of those that are part of our community is what Outsources is here for. And I am honored to have met with Callan and talked about Wheelchair Sports Camp. You can find out more information about Wheelchair Sports Camp, tour dates, their music, music videos, and their evolution at wheelchairsportscamp.co. Thank you for listening. This is Ryan Yala, and you've been tuned into Outsources, your weekly lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer news and culture radio show. Have a good rest of your week.